Well, good afternoon. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the story behind the story, the news behind the news, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that'll determine what the future will bring. Now, I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And if you have any question or comment, why, hold your calls till the half hour, and then you can call us at 464-8295, and you can remember that because it's 464-TAX-L, like for tax less. And then, of course, if outside the 408 dialing area, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. But right now, hold your calls. We have with us Dr. Larry Goss, G-O-S-S, and he's from Oklahoma, and we're going to be talking about something that should be of interest to every person in the listening audience. And, of course, the great tragedy of today is most Americans really aren't concerned with the fact that the African population is being systematically eliminated because of the AIDS epidemic. And as we pointed out in the past, if you go into the major cities in Central and Southern Africa, the incidence among low-risk population like you and me is somewhere between about 15% and 32%. 32% in Zimbabwe. We have these figures, incidentally, from your United States Census Bureau, which is very carefully monitoring the epidemic in Africa, but really not here in America. If you get into the high-risk population, it varies between 40 and 86% in Zimbabwe. That's people maybe in the army, members of the government who go to houses of ill repute. Basically, one of the greatest tragedies of all time is occurring in Africa, and most people really aren't concerned because it doesn't bother them. Well, there are other diseases which are new diseases which will impact on you and your family. Our guest this afternoon is Dr. Larry Goss, and Dr. Goss, being a good Samaritan, was asked to volunteer to work in some of the Veterans Administration clinics in his part of Oklahoma. Dr. Goss, it's so good to have you with us.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about what happened to you as a result of working, you presumably working within the Veterans Administration clinics? There are a lot of people there with this so-called Gulf War syndrome.
Well, there were quite a few. I distinctly recall seeing in the clinics, and of course this is way back when nobody knew anything, and nobody was telling anybody anything, and I can distinctly remember examining and treating as best we could several Gulf War veterans who were quite obviously clinically ill with something.
But of course the government insists it doesn't exist, it's all psychological.
Right.
The American Legion tells people to go in and get the free examination where they'll tell them it's all in your head. But is it all in their head? In other words, do you believe, after your personal experience, that there is a real clinical entity there?
Yes, there is. And I should point out to the folks out there that when we talk about Gulf War syndrome, and I prefer the term syndrome rather than illness.
Sure, okay.
Because DOD and Department of Defense is actually 100% correct when they say that there is no single cause for this constellation of symptoms. It's a multiplicity of causes. You had veterans who were exposed to the pollution of the battlefield, the oil well fires, for example. You had they were being given pyridostigmine bromide tablets totally inappropriately, unapproved and unknown inoculations. We don't know what were really in the inoculations that they were being given. You had the depleted uranium munitions that were being used in that particular theater. You also had DEET that was in pesticides that were being used in an attempt to keep down the sand fleas and flies. And so there was a multiplicity of causes there. In addition, I'm thoroughly convinced that there were exposures and there were chemical weapons used, such things as sarin, which was very high in his armamentarium. We had mustard gas and lewisite that was in the theater. But we also had biologicals that were in the theater and I believe were used. And that is of great concern to me as a physician because it does present a public health risk. The biologicals, of course, are living organisms that are used to, to create disease and thus damage the enemy. And the biologicals can be transmitted from person to person, whereas essentially a chemical exposure cannot.
All right, fine. Now, of course, as a practicing physician, you were probably reading the same journals that most people, most physicians were, and the general tone that I get reading most journals up until maybe January of this year was that there really didn't seem to be much there. In other words, there were a lot of symptoms, but they could never really pin them down for much of anything. And there were an awful lot of people. I know we've had people come to our community from the Veterans Administration, and the inference is it's really all psychological. Were they pushing that same line in Oklahoma up until recently?
Oh, yes. Yeah, to some extent, they still are.
Okay, fine. Well, then, what happened to you personally?
Well, a period of time after this, I became ill with what could be best described as a chronic fatigue syndrome. And as a physician, I'd never experienced anything like this myself. And although I'd had several patients that had it, and you really can't appreciate it until you have it yourself. And the kind of fatigue we're talking about is not, "Oh, I'm just tired, I don't want to go to work" type deal. I mean, it's a piece of work to get the blanket off of you in the morning and brush your teeth. It is bone-crushing, nauseating fatigue that is just simply indescribable until you've had it. My wife also subsequently became ill and became much more ill than I did, and developed many symptoms and signs, physical signs, consistent with multiple sclerosis. And we went to, I think, four different neurologists and a neurosurgeon, a cardiologist, and they all said, "Well, there's something going on. It's some kind of neurological demyelinating disease, but we don't think it's multiple sclerosis because her test specific for that always came up negative. But we don't know what it is."
Now, did they do any MRIs? Because sometimes
You
can pick up. Did they pick up any actual lesions on
No.
the MRI?
No.
Thank goodness for that. Because apparently sometimes, you know, they actually do. In fact, I talked to a Veterans Administration doctor in Southern California who had been doing MRIs in the patients, and he was actually scared to death to talk to me. He had come under so much pressure from the Veterans Administration for doing what doctors would logically try to do, and that is try to find out what's wrong with the patients. How did you find out about Dr. Nicholson, Dr. Garth Nicholson in Southern California?
Well, we were at about our wits' end. My wife continued to deteriorate and was going down the tubes. In fact, she lost the vision in her left eye and is quite legally blind right now in the left eye. She'll probably never get that back. It was to the point of being on a cane and needing a wheelchair. Her condition had deteriorated to where she was essentially bedfast for over a year. And things didn't look very well. And I had a friend over one evening, and we were discussing different things. And he was a neurosurgeon who had attended one of Dr. Nicholson's lectures. And he happened to tell me about the lecture he had attended, that many of the Gulf War veterans who were ill with this syndrome, which, remember now, is all in your head.
Right, which the government is telling you is all in your
right.
head. And if you don't believe it, why, you know, you're a real troublemaker.
And that many of the people were being diagnosed as having multiple sclerosis, or ALS, and other dreaded neurological processes. And so, in fact, it wasn't MS at all, and that many of them had been successfully treated with antibiotics. That the offending organism was an unusual organism called Mycoplasma fermentans, the Incognita strain. So as they say in the cartoons, a great big light bulb went off over my head, and I thought, "Well, I'll be darned." Only that isn't what I said. And so I contacted Dr. Nicholson and got to, he was kind enough to send me many of his research papers, and I talked to him many times. Contacted Joyce Riley and other Gulf War activist organizations, and began to devour and read everything I could get my hands on. And about this point, we both thought we had nothing to lose, and so we went on a course of doxycycline. And this is what you would call empirical therapy. And you observe the response in the patient, and if there's a good response, then it's a pretty sure bet you're on the right track. And the response on both of us was quite phenomenal.
Okay, we're going to have to take our first break, and then when we get back, I want to tell our listeners who don't know who Dr. Garth Nicholson is a little bit about him. But right now, of course, this is the time when we have to remind our listeners that we're listener-supported, and if you agree with our message and you think that the information you're going to get here is important and should be gotten out across America, we'd love to hear from you. Of course, you can join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and for a gift of $20 or more a month, we'll send you the four best tapes of the month, which we encourage you to copy and get out far and wide. Or if you have one specific tape, like this one or some other that you want, you can always contact us and we'll substitute. Or some people who tape our programs regularly prefer a book, and we can certainly give you one of the books we have in stock here, something that we have gotten in that we think will help you better to understand what's going on. So basically, you can write us at Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz. That's Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, 95063. Or you can call us at 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. You can put your first month on your Visa or MasterCards. We don't take American Express. Or certainly you can ask us to just bill you on a monthly basis, and some people prefer doing that because it's too much trouble to remember on their own. And, of course, it's easy to get on the list. It's easy to get off the list. And we understand that sometimes things will come up, which makes it difficult for you to continue to support us. But if you agree our message is important, we'd love to hear from you. Once again, the telephone number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're talking with Dr. Larry Goss. He's from Oklahoma, and he's talking about his experience with the Gulf War syndrome, or at least something akin to that. And he's been talking about Dr. Garth Nicholson. Maybe, Larry, you could tell our listeners a little bit about Dr. Nicholson, what you've learned about him. Because he's not just the average run-of-the-mill scientist.
No, he's quite impressive. I have his curriculum vitae, and it's 30 pages long.
Now, that's over 450 peer-reviewed papers, and I've actually checked that out. I went to the library and before I started to quote him, and, you know, after they'd run off 200 papers, the secretary said, "Do you want me to keep on this computer running?" And I said, "I think I'm convinced who he says he is who he says he is." So certainly he's one of the major cancer researchers in America. So basically you've had an opportunity to talk to Dr. Nicholson, and what did you learn from him?
Well, I learned that this Mycoplasma fermentans organism, he has discovered it in about slightly under half of Gulf War veterans who are ill and their family members. I personally think it may be even higher than that because a little bugger is difficult to find. But the way he found it was using a forensic DNA PCR, polymerase chain reaction test, which is similar to the O.J. Simpson trial that occurred in California recently, only instead of identifying the genetic sequence and therefore the murderer in a forensic case or legal case like that, we're using it to identify infecting organisms by their particular gene sequencing. When they did this, they also discovered something very interesting because the mycoplasma now is a very small bacteria without a cell wall. This particular mycoplasma, the Mycoplasma fermentans, is not a very common mycoplasma organism. You don't generally see it in the general population. But embedded into its gene sequencing was also the gene, the GP120 envelope gene from the human AIDS virus.
Okay, now that's a glycoprotein, that a GP is glycoprotein for the
right.
For the listener who doesn't understand medical jargon, and it's identical to the one that is on the HIV, on the shell of the HIV virus, which allows it to attach onto other cells and invade them.
Right. This particular gene from the AIDS virus is responsible for the encoding of the protein capsid or envelope that goes around the AIDS virus.
Right.
And it's important to stress to the listeners that this does not give one AIDS. But what it does is it allows the mycoplasma then to produce the protein envelope of the AIDS virus around itself, which allows the mycoplasma then to penetrate cell membranes very much like an AIDS virus and get intracellular. Of course, this makes it much more difficult to diagnose and treat, and we feel very strongly that this is very strong evidence of genetic engineering or tampering, if you will, to make this particular organism much more useful, shall we say, as a biological weapon.
And, of course, we've talked to Dr. Nicholson as well, and he feels this is a genetically engineered organism. And yet, you know, as he's tried to talk about this, he's been able to write some articles about it, but certainly he gets tremendous resistance from anybody in the government when he talks about that. I, I never quite understood why. I would think they'd be very grateful to him for doing his research.
Well, unfortunately, I think that once you start finding organisms like this that have obviously been genetically engineered, and the reason we think that is because we've got a viral gene that produces a very specific type of an effect in a bacteria. This is like taking genes from an orange and putting it into an elephant. It's just not going to happen in nature. But once you find that, then the next question is, well, where did this come from? Who did it? And then you get into a real sticky wicket.
Right. And, of course, nobody in government wants to own up to that. In fact, they keep talking about, well, maybe there really were some chemicals released, and maybe it was that bunker we blew up, and gee, what a mistake. But nobody wants to talk about the fact that there is a biological agent that is infecting people, and they don't necessarily have to have gone to the Gulf War. Have you heard of some other people who didn't go to the Gulf, who've come down with this? Because you actually were able to demonstrate by doing blood tests that both you and your wife had the organism.
Right, and we have other civilians, including some in the Texas prison system where this organism was apparently tested in the late 1980s, who have come to me for treatment even.
So the word
gets... other civilians in our community also.
Well, what sort of response have you gotten from other doctors when you've told this story? I suspect most of them sort of raise their eyebrows and look at you a little askance, don't they?
Well, let me put it to you this way. About a year ago, next month, in fact, on July 16th, next month, the veterans organizations, Joyce Riley and I, put on a symposium here in Lawton. Lawton is the third largest city in the state of Oklahoma and is a military town. We have a large Army post here called Fort Sill. And we got excellent coverage from the local TV stations all the way from Oklahoma City to Dallas to Tulsa. Regarding this, we had over 500 people attend our symposium, including all the staff representatives to our entire congressional delegations. They were there. We presented the documents, many of them, most of them, government documents supporting what we were saying. And prior to this, the veterans organizations put together a invitation that was faxed to every physician in the county. And at one point, I asked if I could see a show of hands for the number of physicians that were in the audience while I was speaking. We had a sum total of one physician at that meeting, and that was me.
Well, don't feel bad, because, you know, doctors are good people, but they are they learn certain things at medical meetings and reading medical journals. And if something is not allowed to be in those journals or discussed in the medical meetings, then that is not their reality. Most doctors today have been told so many times that chronic fatigue syndrome is all psychological. There's nothing there, despite the fact it occurs in clusters. Those are must be psychological diseases that occur in clusters. Everything is there to suggest that this is an infectious disease, and yet when the professors and the leaders of organized medicine say it is not so, it's pretty hard to buck the system and say, look, this is the evidence, this is the way it is. And we've seen that down through the ages, whether it was Semmelweis or Pasteur or so many people trying to get information out to the medical profession. And I love medicine, I love doctors, but sometimes there's nobody as blind as those people who are treating this and know there's something there, but they're really not supposed to look beyond what they learn at lectures or read in the medical journals. Would you say that's accurate or not?
Oh, that is absolutely true.
And before you got into this, were you really aware of any of these things?
I was aware, like most doctors, that there was something going on. But when I would see the folks in the VA clinics and go through their sometimes rather voluminous records, all their lab tests showed nothing.
Sure.
Unfortunately, I feel that many of my colleagues these days treat lab tests rather than the patient. But there was obviously something going on, but I didn't know what it was at the time either.
Well, what's actually happening to the veterans who come down with this disease? Does it just go on more or less indefinitely? Does it progressively incapacitate them? I know there was actually, I think, four articles in the Journal of the American Medical Association in January of this year that pointed out there were measurable neurological changes there. So actually, and these were done by rather large universities, documenting the fact that this is a real clinical entity. This isn't an imaginary, but a lot of these people have real signs of degenerative nervous system disease. Have you run into that with some of the veterans you've been treating?
Oh, yes. Yes, certainly they do. Like I say, they many of them have objective signs and symptoms of multiple sclerosis. It seems to be very similar to that in a lot of folks. We've seen, for example, rashes. These unusual rashes are very common. I had those myself. We have...
You get the joint aches and pains and the headaches and all that?
Right. Bleeding gums, hair loss, night sweats. The night sweats are unbelievable. Headaches, a lot of arthralgias.
Right.
The females are having a lot of problems with swelling of the uterus, which is probably due to an infection in that region. You have the constellation of symptoms follows very closely what's known as or called a chronic fatigue immune dysfunction syndrome.
Well, now, what's the relationship between this entity and the chronic fatigue syndrome? Have you done any research on that?
Some people have found mycoplasma fermentans in people with chronic fatigue syndrome.
And apparently, in these clusters that they have, we have them here in California around Lake Tahoe and in Northern California, just areas where this disease, this chronic fatigue syndrome, is found centralized. And, of course, Dr. Nicholson apparently has checked out some of those, and voila, they've all got this same organism that was tested in the jails there in Texas. Isn't that interesting? We're going to have to take our second break for the hour, and when we get back, we hope that you'll give us a call here at 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. But right now, just let me mention, we put together a number of excellent four-tape sets that will help you to understand really what's going on in our society. One of the four-tape sets is called the Gulf War Syndrome. And, of course, it has an interview with Dr. Nicholson and Joyce Riley. We have a four-tape set on America's secret government. We have a four-tape set on Vietnam and China. I mean, do you understand why we're giving most favored nation treaty status to communist China despite their persecution of Christians? Well, you need to understand how it was that China went communist. We'll even send you, when you order that, a copy of the McCarran Committee report, 1951, that tells how why it was that China went communist. We have four tape sets on so many issues, whether it's outcome-based education, whether it's the secrets of masonry, but you need to get the information, and you need to help us to get it out far and wide. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR right now. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this afternoon, Dr. Larry Goss, G-O-S-S, and he's from Oklahoma. And we're talking about the tragic situation that befell him after taking care of, presumably after taking care of veterans in the Veterans Administration hospitals there in Oklahoma. Well, actually, how is your wife doing as a result of the treatments? Has she recovered at all?
Oh, yes. Much better. She still has occasional relapses, and we have to resume the antibiotics, but usually within a week or two after resuming antibiotics, she's doing much better. There has been some damage that probably will never recover from, for example, the loss of vision in the left eye.
Okay, fine. And this is pretty characteristic from what I get from talking to others who have been dealing with this, but the tragedy is that the Veterans Administration hospitals are refusing to treat these people because the veterans doctors are told there is nothing wrong with them. And those few doctors that have had the courage to investigate it or treat it have come under tremendous pressure. Have you heard anything about that?
Oh, yeah.
What have you heard?
Well, some of them have been fired.
Okay, fine. And I think that's so important for our listeners to understand, is that when doctors stand up and do what's right and they work for the government, boy, are they in real trouble, because they've got to keep a lid on this story, because when the American people realize that every one of you in the listening audience is potentially in danger from this, and this is a genetically engineered organism, and Dr. Garth Nicholson, a professor at MD Anderson Clinic, was actually fired. He was a tenured professor, but the government put pressure on the institution to get rid of him. Why? Because he was trying to bring out the truth about this. Well, if you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question or comment, 464-8295 or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And you may be one of those people who said, this just can't be true. I mean, things like that don't go on in America. You know, Larry, if somebody had told you this story a couple of years ago about one of your compatriots, one of your fellow physicians, would you have been willing to accept it as true?
It'd
be pretty hard.
It'd be hard. I'd have to look at it. I also would like to point out to your listeners, you know, there were 28 coalition countries that took part in Desert Shield, Desert Storm. Of those 28 countries, 27 have a problem with Gulf War syndrome in their troops, family members, and civilians at home. One country does not. That country is France. And that brings up a real interesting situation because France did a number of things differently from the other coalition troops, which were, of course, led by the Americans. One thing that they did is they did not allow their troops to take the inoculations that were being given by the Americans to all the coalition troops. The other thing is that they refused to allow their troops to take the pyridostigmine bromide tablets. But the most interesting thing is that before they even went to theater during the war, they began giving their troops doxycycline.
Yeah, I wonder why they picked that one specific a medication
correct.
Which is specific for this organism. It's almost like maybe they knew something that they didn't want, that our troops weren't allowed to know.
That's very interesting, and I learned just a few days ago from a veteran who was at Cement City, an American veteran, that his unit was ordered to take Cipro. They were throwing it off the back of Humvees and told to start taking the medication in. In fact, he showed me one of the tablets that he brought back with him, and that's definitely what it is. It outdated in December of 93. And other units were not given Cipro.
Now, Cipro is a very, you're going to have to clue me in, that's a new medicine. Is that the doxycycline?
It's an antibiotic that is very effective against the organism.
Okay.
It's one of the ones that we also use.
And so they gave it to certain groups and they didn't others, like maybe they were trying to find out how it would work?
A double-blind study.
Right, yeah, with American troops.
The interesting thing about this was that the day after they were given the Cipro, they were hit with their first scud. And then 2 or 3 weeks later, they were told to turn in any remaining Cipro and were not given any more during the war.
Okay, did you know anything, what happened to that unit? In other words, did they come down with a lot of this or not?
The individual that I was speaking of is positive for the mycoplasma fermentans incognitus that's been genetically engineered.
Now, it's interesting that not only is Dr. Nicholson doing the blood test, but there are several medical installations in Southern California that have started doing the test so that you can actually get the test done in Southern California at the present time to find out if possibly you have this organism.
Yes, we've used a commercial lab in Beverly Hills, California, called Immuno